Today on Wings, women who are resisting the exploitation of environmentally dangerous tar sands, both in Canada and the United States.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Oil sands, or tar sands as their opponents prefer to call them, are a geological formation in which petroleum has been absorbed into sand and clay. To extract the oil, the sand has to be heated, using energy that is costly in both environmental and financial terms. The oil comes out of the sand as a thick, tarry solid called bitumen, which has to be chemically processed before it will flow through a pipe. Economists say it is not cost-effective to harvest this oil unless the price of crude is at least $100 a barrel. As of March 29, 2013, the price of crude was just over $97 a barrel. However, the Conservative government of Canada is very eager to generate markets for this resource and is promoting the building of pipelines from the tar sands to refineries in Texas as well as to the west coast of Canada for shipment to China. Opponents see many problems with this industry. For one thing, harvesting tar sands oil is said to create 12% more greenhouse gas than liquid oil. Huge amounts of water are used to get the oil out, and polluted water is then stored in toxic ponds that leak into rivers and streams, causing serious health effects in animals and people. Also, vast tracts of land have to be strip mined. The mines in the province of Alberta, Canada, are big enough now to be seen from outer space. There is quite a large movement against the exploitation of tar sands oil, with activists in Canada, the U.S., and Europe. In February 2013, women from the U.S. and Canada converged in Washington, D.C., as the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus. The women you are about to hear spoke at an event called Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Tar Sands to Renewables. Osprey Oriel Lake is founder and president of the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus. She works with grassroots leaders, policymakers, business people, and scientists to foster a post-carbon energy future. She is also co-chair of international advocacy for the Global Alliance for the Rights of Nature.
We often hear this critique of the environmental movement that we've really not made the case to the American people about climate change. You would think with Katrina and Superstorm Sandy and the fires and the drought that that would make the case, but apparently we need to make it more. And so one of the things that we do at the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus is provide the opportunity for women of the land who are being impacted by this environmental degradation to share their stories and share their experiences so we get the heart and spirit of what's really going on the land. Tonight we're going to hear from women on the front lines of the tar sands and its infrastructure. First from Ground Zero in Alberta at the source where the dirty oil is being extracted. And there's been massive destruction, as you know, to the land and the water, and also to the communities that live there. Then we're going to hear from frontline women in Texas who are fighting for their lands that stand directly in the path of the pipeline. So we're really honored to bring these two communities of women together tonight.
Hello. I'm grateful to each and every one of you. My name is Crystal Lehman. I come from the Beaver Lake Cree Nation. In Canada, there's 11 treaties, 1 to 11. And I come from treaty number 6. And within those treaties, that document we signed with the British Crown, it says that as long as the sun shines, the grass grows and the rivers flow, we will have an obligation and inherent right to the land. And as a woman, we have a belief, the Cree people, that women are the keepers of the water. That's our responsibility. It's not by chance that women carry their children in their womb in water, the way we have that connection to Mother Earth. So every once in a while, I go down to my communities, the lake, Beaver Lake, and I'll go and I'll pay respect to that water. And I'll put tobacco down. And I went up there this past year with my children, my son's birthday. He turned 5 years old. And I thought, I'm going to take my children up there so that they can experience. They can get healing too. They can heal along with me. And I still to this day have guilt for taking my children up there. My son got a headache, got a bleeding nose. My 14-year-old niece had an asthma attack. My baby got sick. So as a mother, I still carry that guilt for taking my children up there and exposing them to that. And then to know that there's a First Nations community just kilometers from there. And that's what we're endearing as people, First Nations people up in that area, up in the tar sands area.
Yeah, I'm right here.
So the old people, they talk about how the fish, they don't taste good anymore. And they know it's from the pollution. They talk about how the fish used to taste pure and clean. And they talk about when there was a time that they could skim the top of the water, a slough, and take their dipper from their bag and drink the water. You wouldn't do that today because you'd get violently ill, if not die. And I do this because I have children. And my children deserve those basic human rights. They deserve to drink clean water and breathe clean air. So when you're going out there and you're doing what you do, think about that. Think about the people up there that are being affected by this because it's a reality. It's the truth. Give an askum then. An askum. Hey.
Malina Labukan Massimo is a Lubicon Cree from northern Alberta. She joined Greenpeace as a tar sands climate and energy campaigner and works with the Indigenous Environmental Network.
This is a picture of where we're from. It's about the size of Florida altogether, so it's 140,000 square kilometers. A lot of people, Indigenous people, farmers, settlers, all live in that area. This is what the mines look like. They're actually bigger than entire cities. So the sixth mine that's currently being built right now is Pearl Mine. It's Imperial Oil, and it actually will be bigger than Washington, D.C. when it's done. So think of your city being completely just scraped out to become this. And that's what's happening to our homelands. The yellow dump truck to the red and then the yellow, that yellow dump truck is three stories high, so it's actually bigger than this room. It's hard to access these mines, but this is an aerial picture, so it's a flyover picture that we took. This is the other kind of underground mining, it's called in situ or SAGD, steam assisted gravity drainage. So what they do is superheat steam to hundreds of meters down below the Earth's core, melt the bitumen layer, and then suck it back up. And this, they actually have to use like steam about to 350 degrees Celsius. So it's really hot steam, and that's what they do is melt the core. And so sometimes, you know, what we see is these actually cave in or they explode because you push, you know, superheated steam down and it explodes. So we have pictures of this one company, Total, it was a French company in 2006, created a 300-meter crater because of projects like this being in the tar sands. And there's already actually over 95 of them in Alberta. And we're seeing already massive problems. So if things like the Keystone XL pipeline are approved, it's just going to exacerbate the problems that we're already seeing. And I'm going to go a little bit over that. So. That's my dad actually in the top corner there in the bush. We're a very isolated community, very isolated, very northern. That's my grandmother where I was born beside the Peace River. And the boreal forest is an ancient forest. It's pristine, it's beautiful. A lot of our medicines are there, a lot of wildlife. It's such a beautiful area. They call it the lungs of the earth. And so it's a very ancient forest, and what they're doing is they're unearthing this for tar sands extraction. The Lubicon Cree, where I come from, there's already 2,600 oil and gas wells taking up 70% of our territory. It's making it very difficult to live sustainably on the land because of air quality and water issues. Then we also have 1,400 square kilometers of tar sands, possible plans for nuclear development to fuel the tar sands. Yeah, we don't have nuclear in Alberta. It's all natural gas. It's basically used natural gas to feed the tar sands, so one fossil fuel to feed another fossil fuel. And then I really like this stat because it gives you an understanding of how much discrepancy exists in our communities. Since 1978, before I was born, over $14 billion has been taken out of our traditional territory, yet my family still has no running water till this day. So it is shameful, and it's you know, you think of Canada as like this, you know, pioneer of environmentalism or human rights, but that's really not the case, especially where I come from. You'll see this all over the landscape: danger, no entry, poisonous gas, and this is what, you know, people want to pick berries, or people want to make medicine, or people want to go hunting. It's, you know, you can't go into these areas, which our families traditionally have done for thousands of years. So it's a really hard transition period right now. We're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, really, in Alberta. The glacial areas which feeds the tar sands, which actually the companies are allowed to take water out of these areas. This is the beginning of the Athabasca watershed. So this is a glacier. You can see it's receded. And basically the water that's being used is pristine water to make tar sands. And so they use, every day in the tar sands, they use 2 to 5 barrels of water for 1 barrel of tar sands oil. And it's coming from amazing places like this. And it's being turned into things like this. It looks like a lake if you see it from the air. This is taken from the air we took. So birds are landing in this, but what it actually is cyanide, mercury, lead, polyaromatic hydrocarbons, benzoic acids, known carcinogens that are just sitting on our landscape, over 180 square kilometers currently, because every day thousands and thousands, you know, cubic meters are just being pumped into the landscape, and they just sit there without any casing, and these are leaching into the Athabasca. So that's why when you hear of elevated rates of cancers, it's because people downstream have to drink this water. This is a Trans-Canada pipeline, actually, that was built across our traditional territory and Lubicon territory without the consent of our community, and this was built. So we see these types of landscapes being produced. And then things like this, where we're seeing actually extinction of species within my lifetime. By 2040, the woodland caribou will be extirpated from tar sands deposit regions because the researchers will basically say they can't sustain this type of industrialization, so their natural habitat is basically being defunct, and it's being fragmented or destroyed because of the mines and the underground mining. This is why I do the work that I do, to talk to other communities about these issues and how it's going to impact potentially other people. And that's, you know, why I decided to come to Washington to talk to people about the Keystone XL, because it's not fun, and I know what it's like to have to experience an oil spill and how it affects your family. And I think it's important, these stories are important for people to hear. And to finish off, just wanted to finish on a lighter note. Every year we've been planning a healing walk in the tar sands, and I wanted to invite anyone that feels so inclined to come to see the tar sands for themselves, please come. July 5th and 6th we'll be there. So hi, thank you for listening.
Today has just been such a day that's been rich in emotion, and that can play both ways. I mean, this morning, and the collective spirit and the energy and the music and the hugging and the just everything just took me to heights. It's like, this is such a positive day, and there's positive energy. And then it's gut-wrenchingly tragic to see what's going on and see what these women's, how their lives are affected. So I'm going to try to balance this out a little bit and tell you what's going on in my neck of the woods. My name is Julia Trigg Crawford. I'm a third-generation farm manager in far northeast Texas. I live near the town of Paris, Texas, but I actually live in a town called Direct. It's a community of 70 people. If y'all come, you would basically, you know, tenfold the whole city there. But here's what's going on. Today's discussions, and a great deal of what was talked about today, was Keystone XL and what we can do collectively and individually to stop Keystone XL from being permitted. But y'all need to know that TransCanada found a way around the process And as quickly as they could, they uncoupled a leg of that proposed pipeline and couldn't work fast enough to get it in the ground in Texas. It's called the Gulf Coast segment of the Keystone Pipeline. And where we stand today is they started, I think, in August or September, and they've been working 6 days a week, as many people as they could put on the payroll to put this thing in the ground. Our family took a stand about 3 years ago saying, we don't believe you, TransCanada, that you have the right to take our land for your pipeline. And in Texas, it's, you know, and most of the place, eminent domain. Now, eminent domain is not a bad thing when used properly. If a city needs water, or a town needs a school, or a road needs to be built, if it's for the public good, and you can prove it, and there's a collective receptiveness to it, then it's okay. But what TransCanada did is they found out that the rules in Texas are such that if you go to the Railroad Commission, put some money on the table, and check a box, that this state agency will just turn a blind eye to what you do, and that you can pick up the club of eminent domain and start hitting landowners over the head. So that's kind of what happened. When the Crawford family said, we don't want your pipeline, TransCanada said, well, then we're going to take your land. They had the little local county judge condemn it in a behind-the-closed-door session. They talk about transparency. There's absolutely no transparency to how land is taken in Texas. So our family said, well, we're going to fight this thing, and we're going to appeal the condemnation. Now, that was 18 months ago, and we're still in the hunt, and thanks to a lot of the support that y'all have given. So after months of testimony, after thousands of pages of document, after international coverage in this little bitty town of Paris, Texas, the judge sent a 15-word ruling from his iPhone that said, TransCanada can take the Crawfords' land. We're not going down that easy, okay? In fact, next week we will file our appeal to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Texarkana, Texas. Fortunately there will be a panel of three judges who are experienced, who are used to handling big cases, and who I hope take courageous measures and listen to the facts and actually force TransCanada to come to the table with the proof we've been asking for, and we don't think they have the proof. So, thanks to the support of people from every state. In fact, we're nickel and diming our way through this legal battle. TransCanada's got billions riding on this little 1,200-foot section of land that we're not willing to give up.
Eleanor Fairchild is a 78-year-old farmer from eastern Texas who is working to defend her land against the Keystone XL pipeline. Eleanor is a great-grandmother who was arrested for trespassing on her own farm.
My husband and I bought the land in 83, and we moved there in 88. My husband was senior vice president of Hunt Oil Company in charge of their international exploration. He was a geologist for 50 years. But he, by then, didn't know what was going on because he had Alzheimer's, so I really didn't get to talk to him about tar sands. And so when they said crude oil, I wasn't really against a crude oil pipeline. I just wanted to make sure that I got a fair deal and they did it right. But then when they came to negotiate with me, they said they wouldn't plant grass back in the coastal fields, or they wouldn't plant trees on their easement, their workspace. And they weren't concerned about the water. I live on a topographic high where spring water comes out. There's 400 gallons per minute of spring water running off my land. They weren't concerned about that. They said it wouldn't hurt the value of the land. And I didn't like anything that they said. And he told me that I had to sign it. They were coming. He came on March the 2nd, and my husband died on March the 11th. And he kept calling several times to talk to me about signing the contract. I said, I haven't thought about your pipeline. I've been busy with other things. finally I turned it over to my attorney that was handling the estate. And in April of 2010, there was a State Department meeting in Tyler, Texas, and we went over to ask what was our rights. You know, didn't they have to plant or put our fields back in the right way? And I found out at the State Department what tar sands was and the damage it was doing in Canada and how much water it took to get it out, how expensive it was. And that was when I decided, well, I was mad because they lied to me. And I decided that I needed to fight this. But I've never done this before. This is my first experience with this. But at this point, TransCanada is on my land, and the pipe's in the ground. One thing that I can't understand in this whole thing is how TransCanada has so much power in the United States. It's a foreign company. This whole thing became bigger than just my land and me. I'm fighting for everyone. I'm fighting for Canada. And I do a lot of profound thinking while I'm out pulling weeds in the garden. And I think that it's immoral for us as a nation to allow a pipeline to come through here with tar sands that's not even going to be for us in the first place, but I don't like tar sands anywhere. But they are to leave it in the ground. But I think it's immoral for us to enable Canada to do what it's doing. As a people, I think it's wrong. I think about our children, and people talk about our debt. You know, we can get out of the debt. But if we mess up our water and our earth doing something stupid, like using this stuff, tar sands, you know, we might make it an earth where our children can't live. It might be a thing that we can't even solve regardless of how much money we have. I think if we're not careful, we're going to destroy ourselves and everything on this earth. It's time to start thinking about what we do today.
Winona LaDuc is an Anishinaabe woman and executive director of Honor the Earth. She is an internationally acclaimed author, orator, and activist.
This one scholar in Timbuktu said, "The world looks really small when you're looking down the barrel of a gun. And you know what? The world looks really small when you're looking down the barrel of a pipeline, too. Yeah. It's really, really small. And I say that because that's how they're thinking. They're thinking really small, they're thinking about profits, they're thinking about some manufactured set of jobs that do not exist,
right.
Some strategy that does not exist, and some life that is not anything that any of us want to have. And it's really, really important to not let them keep repeating the lie, because the more times they say the lie, it doesn't mean it's true. It means it's still a lie. And so what we have to remember is that we fought these guys a long time. I've been at this pretty much my whole adult life. I started at about 18, which was a long time ago. And I, you know, what I've seen us do is I've seen us phase out a bunch of uranium mining companies in the southwest of the Navajo Reservation, and we did that by working with the anti-nuclear movement. And I've seen us stop uranium mining in the Black Hills with a bunch of ranchers and cowboys, which is what the cowboys from Indians is looking to do it again on the pipeline. Right? I've seen that happen. A lot of people they thought had no political power and certainly couldn't think straight, but we could.
Yay.
I've seen us stop a bunch of dam projects that shouldn't be. But what I know is what you know, is that it's still pretty damn complicated. That we still consume way too much energy and we're really, really inefficient. And so they feed on this fear that we have. They feed on a lot of the fear that is epidemic in America. That you're gonna freeze in the dark and you're not gonna be able to fuel your tank. They're gonna talk about the fact that we waste 57% of the energy between point of origin and point of consumption. And why the hell would you wanna try to fill that need with renewables? They say renewables won't fill that need, you know, won't feed present demand, won't fill it. Well, why the hell would you want to? 57% is going to waste. Why would you want to fuel such an inefficient system? Why would you want to fuel any more shrimp and kiwis from some place they should not come from every day, or goji berries, or wherever the hell they come from? You know what I'm saying? The answers are far more simple than they make it sound. You don't need to figure out where the carbon sequestration theory is going to come from, because there is not one. You know? What you really need to do is to figure out how to relocalize our food, relocalize and get efficient with our energy, and we need to hold these corporations accountable. That's what we have to do. And we have the power to do that. We've done that in a lot of ways, but we've got to double it up or triple it up now. You know, I did go to school with Bill McKibben, and I did work on the South African divestment campaign. And that was a very, very powerful movement, and we do need to increase that. Again, to hold these fossil fuel companies accountable. And we need to say you cannot profit off death. You cannot profit off not even bargaining with our planet, because they ain't even bargaining. They're mortgaging it and they're destroying it. So let us just be honest about what they're calling their right to profit. Let us just be honest about what that is. But in that, I'm just gonna say, like in my closing, as I think about this, you have to have some courage. You know, these women came a really long way. Do not leave these people, do not hang them out to dry because they are far away. Do not hang landowners out to Texas to dry because Texas is a state that looks pretty screwed up anyway. Don't hang them out to dry, scare them. You know, I like these ladies, so. And do not hang Native people out to dry. You know, I know how racism works in this country. I'm quite familiar with the fact that people are sometimes uncomfortable with standing with Native people. What you have to remember is that the treaties with Native people are also your treaties too. Yeah, right. You're the other side of that. You're the other side of that. And good people keep their agreements and force their government to keep their agreements. There's no place for guilt in this. There's no place for guilt in this. There's no place for, this is an Indian issue. This is a Native issue, because it turns out we all live on Mother Earth. We all live here. And these people, these women, are on the front lines. They are on the front lines. And those of us who might be living in a little more comfort, drinking our cappuccinos when we want to and having our, you know, New York Times or whatever it is, we need to figure out how to support these people with the privilege that we have and the places that we live.
And that was Winona LaDuke closing the Women, Earth, and Climate Caucus event about the tar sands, held February 17, 2013, in Washington, D.C. The audio was recorded by Melinda Tuhus. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.